Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
I'm so sorry. Subject, thank you, Deborah, and nice and Jeffrey and Eve.
Good evening, good evening.
Yeah, all the way from Cleveland. Now let's try and get back to the text that I was trying to look at. Sorry, my computer is being invaded by all kinds of nasty rivals of Zoom, like Teams. where are we? Here. And now we have right, and we go to McCates. Okay, we're just getting there. Okay, right. Now, 1 second. Sorry, now we're back to where we were 10 minutes ago. Let's just see if this will load. Right, thank God. Okay, everything depends on muzzle, says the sages. Right, so we have the beginning of the Sedra here. Vayehi miketz shanatayim yamim. It was at the end of 2 years. Ufaruch olem vihine omed al hayo'or. Pharaoh was dreaming and he was standing over the river. Now, just to recap the story very briefly, you've got the uneasy relationship between Joseph and his brothers, partly because his father favored him over the brothers. And the code of law says to us, be very careful in relation to your children. Don't favor one over the others, because that can lead to bad things, as happened with Joseph and his brothers. One of the, apart from his father favoring him, another aspect of the bad feeling between him and his brothers were the dreams that he had. He had two dreams, which indicate his superiority to them, that they would come and bow down to him. And so so what happened next is that Joseph was, when he went to visit his brothers, where they were supposed to be farming the sheep, they caught him and thinking first they would kill him. There are all kinds of Talmudic explanations and discussions, you know, how could they think of doing such a thing, but we're not going into that. Every story in the biblical text has many layers of interpretation and explanation by the sages. But here we're just looking at the simple story. So they caught him and they decided not to kill him, but they would sell him as a slave. So they did so, and he ended up in Egypt, and he was in the house of Potiphar, and everything was going very well, but Potiphar's wife began fancying him, as they say in English, and wanted him to sleep with her, and he refused, and she got angry and claimed that he had attacked her, which wasn't true. It was the opposite was the case. And they put him in prison. And then in prison, he meets the butler and the baker, and he interprets their dreams. And his interpretations are right. And the butler, whose dream signified, as interpreted by Joseph, that Pharaoh would soon set him free, that came true. And the baker, whose dream was interpreted to mean that he would be executed, that's exactly what happened. And now it says, 2 years later, Pharaoh was dreaming and he was standing on the river. And what happens next is that he has this a complicated double dream about seven fat cows and then seven thin cows, and the thin cows eat the fat cows. And then it's again repeated with seven fat ears of corn, which are then devoured by seven thin ears of corn. And Pharaoh doesn't know what these dreams mean, and none of his dream interpreters can tell him. And at this point, the butler remembers, oh, I remember when I had been put in prison, and there was this Hebrew young man there, and he was able to interpret dreams. So they get Joseph from the prison, and he has a wash and a shave and new garments. And then he comes to the king and interprets the dream, and it's that there's going to be 7 years of plenty, and that will then be followed by 7 years of famine. And he gives advice what you should do during the 7 years of plenty. You should store the food so you can use it during the 7 years of famine. And the king is amazed and said, this is wonderful, and I want you to organize it. You're going to be the leader of Egypt, the viceroy. And so that's Joseph's rise to power. Okay. So now we have the discourse. Now the discourse starts off, we're going to look at the actual text. It starts off by discussing this whole question of this 2 years. It was at the end of 2 years. Because the funny thing is that when we meet Joseph at the beginning of this sequence, which really began in last week's Sedra, he was 17 years old. And when he comes to leadership in Egypt, he's 30 years old. So somehow or other, 12 or 13 years have gone by. And so this 2 years is actually 2 years in addition to another 10 years. There were 10 years that he was in prison. He was sold, and then he was in prison for 10 years. And then there's an extra 2 years. And so that's, you know, that's sort of the point where the discourse begins. And it's a very spiritual discourse. It begins off with a kind of analysis of this, you know, numbers of years, which, to be honest, we're going to skip that. And then it goes into a very subtle idea about this idea miketz at the end. The English doesn't express it, vayihi miketz. It was at the end of 2 years. Now, this idea of ends. Now, ends are always fascinating things in Jewish thought. Especially since you have the idea, if you look at the Hebrew, miketz yamim, the end of days. Now you can have miketz yamim with a mem at the end, and you can have miketz yamim with a nun at the end. The Hebrew plural is a mem. The Aramaic plural sometimes is a nun. And so so you have these two varieties of the end of days. The end of days with the mem, the end of days with the nun. So that's what the discourse is going to be talking about. So we're going to try and load the discourse, one second, I've got to find the right place. And so we want Vayehi Miketz. Vayehi Miketz. Here we are. Let's see if it'll open. There we are. Wonderful. Wunderbar. Now all I have to do is share it. Right at the beginning of creation, God planned that there would be this technology so that we could study Torah together. Right, I think you can see it now. The earlier hiccup is gone. Right, so this was said Shabbat Parshat Miketz, which is what we're coming to, which was the fourth of Tevet, and I think that's the same date as this Shabbat. Yes, it is. That was 1972. Vayhi Miketz Shnatayim Yamim, and it was at the end of 2 years, Ufarach Olem, and Pharaoh is dreaming, V'enei Omed Al Hayor, and he's standing over or on the river. And then comes a whole discussion about this 2 years, how this fits, that there's actually 10 years before that. And there's also a question, the significance of the river and Pharaoh in relation to the river. Why does it say Pharaoh standing on the river? The river was an idol of Egypt. So why is he standing on the river? All right, we might get to the elucidation of that near the end of the discourse. Now, so here, the Yesh Levi Tchila. First, we have to explain. So we're missing out the first section. We first have to explain. Klalud Inyan Miketz Shnatayim Yamim. What does it mean, the end of 2 years? Kamuva Ba'or Torah, as it says in a book of Hasidic discourses by the third Lubavitcher Rebbe, Sheyes Bezer Shnei Perushim. There are two explanations. Sheheim Behetim Lishnei Afanim Beketz. They relate to the two ways we can understand this word end, Shenizkeru BaZohar, which is mentioned in the Holy Zohar. Keitz HaYamim, the end of days with a mem at the end, right? Keitz means end. HaYamim means days of days. Shehu Mesitra DeSmala, and this is from the left-hand side, right? In Kabbalah, we have the idea of the right and the left. The right is the dimension of kindness. The left is the dimension of severity. So when we have Yamim with a Mem, that is the left-hand side. V'keitz HaYamin, and the end of days with the Nun instead of a Mem. Now, the interesting thing is Yamim means days, whether it's got a Nun or a Mem. But there's another word, Yamin, which means right, like right and left. So Yamin, which also is the plural of days, is the word for right. So we have the aspect of the end of days on the right. So there's the end of days on the left and the end of days on the right. The end of days of severity, the end of days of kindness. The Hine, because behold, Bazoa Tam, the Zohar here, Perash explains, Vayhi Miketz, that what does it mean about this word Miketz? Da iu Ketz Dismala. This is the end of the left. It's the left dimension of Ketz, of end. V'chein Mashma B'Torah, and that's also implied in the discourse in that book by the third Lubavitcher Rebbe, where he explained that when it says the end of 2 years, of days, l'shon sof v'tichla, it's the very end, the conclusion, l'bchinat shnatayim yamim, of the 2 years of days. Perush, that implies, that means, sheyichle chas v'shalom etzlo, that there should be concluded, God forbid, for him, bchinat ha-Torah, the quality of Torah, Shehi bechinat shnatayim yamim, because Torah is something that we can talk about as 2 years. It's not 2 years; it's 2,000 years. But it's this idea of two, this doubleness about Torah. K'moshe katuv ve'eyesh ashuim yom yom. The Torah says, "I was God's plaything. I was God's delight." Yom Yom, one day and another day. Alpayim Shana, 2,000 years. Kadmat Torah Lo'olam, the Torah came before the world. And it ends off there. Shebemeshech Hazman Naseh Ufaro Cholem. And from this, there it leads off into the idea of Pharaoh dreaming. So in other words, this end of days is a negative end of days. And it's like as if Torah would cease, God forbid, for Joseph, and that he's been so long in exile that somehow the Torah would fade away from him, God forbid. So that is the left-hand end. So that is where, that is in this discourse by the third Lubavitcher Rebbe. Omnam, based on the Zohar. Omnam, however, Belikitei Torah Me'arizal, in a book which collects the teachings of Rabbi Isaac Luria, Peresh explains Shuketsa Yamin, that it is the end of days with the nun instead of the mem. And that means chesed, that means kindness, that means the right side, because yamin, as well as meaning days, also means right, the right hand. V'chein mashma b'bereshit rabba, and similarly, in the Midrash, when it says on the verse, if people I'd be grateful if people similarly it says in Bereshit Rabbah, that's the Midrash, on this verse Vahimikates. Now this then quotes a most beautiful and special verse. Hadahu dichtiv, that's what is written. Kate sam lachoshech, God puts an end to darkness. It's a very beautiful verse. I think it's in the book of Job. And it's in the book of Job. And it again explains in the Midrash, Zman Natana Kadosh Baruch Hu, the Holy One, bless me, he gave a time, Bo'olamot, to his world. Kama Yaseh Bafela, how long it will be in darkness. Kol Zman Shayetza Rabo Olam, so long that the evil desires in the world are Fela Bo'olam, there's darkness in the world. But when the evil desire is uprooted from the world, then the darkness will also cease from the world. So that means that when it says it was at the end, who can walk some lachoshech. It's like the end of the darkness. And the end of the darkness means Hainu Sof HaGalut, the end of exile. Shezeu Inyan Ketz HaYamin, which is the end of days, with a Nun, which is the right. So you see, we've got the end of days with a Mem, which is the left, which is an expression of negativity, which is an expression of things coming to an end in a not wished for way. And then we have the end of days in a positive way, that it's the end of days on the right, in a way of kindness and chesed, of goodness, where the darkness comes to the end. So if we take the imagery, which is in this discourse, I mean, it's a very striking, you know, it presented it in a very striking way. The negative end is Torah ceasing, the person forgetting Torah, like Hasidic images in early Hasidism about a person who went to a place where no one knew him and he forgot everything, and he forgot the language, his own language, and he forgot Torah. This concept of some kind of deep forgetting and then how eventually he's going to remember again. So that's, so there's this deep forgetting as the negative, and then there's the beautiful end of negativity, which is the positive. And then there's another explanation in the Midrash. Zman Natan Yosef Kama Shanim Yaseh Ba'afela B'Veit Asurim. He would come back to the figure of Joseph. God gave Joseph a certain number of years, how long he's going to be in the darkness, in the prison, in the pit. Kevin Shagia Ketz, when it came to the end of the time that Joseph was supposed to be in prison, Miyadu Farocholem, then immediately Pharaoh has this dream. And that having of the dream, of course, that's the beginning of Joseph coming out. So Joseph departed from the prison and he became the viceroy. So how do these different explanations connect together? That's what the Rebbe is asking. All right, so at the moment, what we've got together are different interpretations, the same few words, Ketzayamim, Ketzayamim. The end of days, is it with a mem, with a nun, how it's explained by the Zohar, how the Midrash explains it this way, that way, how it's explained in Hasidic teachings, how it's explained by Rabbi Isaac Luria. And then comes the question of what it means. Okay, so we're now up to section Gimel. V'yuvan. But I think maybe just if we stop for a second and just ask, are we all on board? Are we all following? And it's nice to say hello to Nicole and to Chesed. So are there any questions at this point? I mean, at this point, it's like collecting of proof texts that we're looking at. Different midrashim, different Hasidic texts, Kabbalistic texts, and then we're going to try to see how the Rebbe puts it together for us. But is there any question at this point, Eve?
I just wanted to know exactly what it is we're trying to find out.
Well, you see, we have these two words in the Sedra, the end of days. In the Seder, it's actually three words, the end of 2 years of days. So the fact that it's 2 years, that's another aspect. But there is Joseph in prison, and there's somehow 2 years that's gone by, another 2 years, because earlier he was 10 years in prison. Then he met the butler and the baker, and then he's another 2 years in prison. And it says the end of days, and the Zohar says one thing about it, and a Hasidic text says a different thing about it. And the question is how you spell Ketz HaYamin. Do you spell it with a mem at the end or a nun? And one way is the left side, the negative, the side of severity. And the other way is the right side, the side of kindness. And Yamin, which means days, also means the right. Right hand. And so at this point, the discourse is looking at different interpretations of this. And so there's different passages in the Zohar, in the Midrash, Rabbi Isaac Luria. So the discourse hasn't actually brought anything out from this yet. It's just setting the stage, so to speak. It's setting the stage. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Right. So now, v'yuva. Now, this will be understood. Okay, so that's a promise. The Rebbe is telling us we're going to understand it. So let's see. This will be understood, behekta mamavor ba'or Torah, when we consider what it says in this Hasidic tract by the third Lubavitcher Rebbe, shetachlit inyan yeridat Yosef l'mitzrayim, the purpose of Joseph to send to Egypt, who kodesh al yedei zeh, is that in order that you kal lehem agalut, that when the Jews actually go into exile to Egypt, the exile will be easier. Now, you see, there's two ways of understanding the story. One way we understand the story, which the Rebbe wants to reject here, is that because Joseph went to Egypt, that's why we all ended up in Egyptian exile. Now, the Rebbe rejects this interpretation. Not as one might initially think, that it's because Joseph was in Egypt, the children of Israel, literally Jacob and his children, came down to Egypt. Because even though that seems to be the sequence of events, that is not actually the reason why they came down to Egypt. They would have gone down to Egypt anyway. And there is a famous passage in the Talmud that Jacob would have been forced to go to Egypt one way or the other. It happened, he went because of Joseph. But in fact, the story is different. The Jewish people were going to go and be in Egypt. But Joseph's going there, his initial going there, Shapa'al ha'netinat koach yetziat b'nei Yisrael m'mitzrayim. Joseph actually empowered the Jewish people that when they are in Egypt, they will be able to get out. Now, this is a very, very striking concept. You see, Joseph represents the tzaddik, the leader of the Jewish people. And the leader of the Jewish people goes through things on behalf of the Jewish people as a whole. And the struggles that he encounters in this process are really struggles which he is carrying out on behalf of the entire Jewish people. And so when he goes through something, he is really battling. It's not only his battle, it's the battle for, on behalf of, the entire Jewish people. A way to think about this, there is a very beautiful discourse which talks about Jacob wrestling with the angel, which was in last week's Sedra, or 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
And in that Sedra, it has Jacob wrestling with the angel, and there's a discourse which explained that this wrestling was also on behalf of the struggle, the encounter between his children and Esau, the hostile Esau. And would they be able to deal with Esau, with the negativity of Esau? And the answer is yes, because Jacob was wrestling with the angel. His wrestling with the angel is helping them in their encounter with Esau. So in the same way here, you could suggest, right? It doesn't say it quite like this, but this is how I'm interpreting it and sharing with you. Maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong. But this is a kind of a mirror of that. Joseph is here in Egypt in order to enable the Jewish people, his brothers and nephews and nieces down through a few generations, thousands and thousands of people, that they will be able to be in Egypt and they will be able to survive that exile and they'll be able to come out of that exile. The Inyan Zen Na'asa, and this takes place because he sifted out the sparks of holiness, which were in Egypt. Now, in the Lurianic Kabbalah, it explains in this kind of graphic imagery that there are sparks of holiness sown throughout the world. And our encounters with life and the challenges of life and the dangers and the evil and the darkness and the war and the bitterness, is all encounters in order to redeem sparks. That there are these sparks of holiness, we might say, in the tunnels under Gaza. And redeeming these sparks, that is the essential step in the process to bring Mashiach. And the hint in the biblical text, so the biblical text doesn't talk about mystical Kabbalistic sparks, but it does say, Vayalaked Yosef et kol hakesef, Joseph collected all the silver, hanimtza be'eretz Mitzrayim, which was in the land of Egypt, uve'eretz Canaan, and in the land of Canaan, the whole area. It's a very mysterious passage, this economic description of how everyone is buying corn from Joseph, and then they spend all their money, and they find whatever they can to give him more money and get more corn. It's something very mysterious. And here there's a Kabbalistic explanation that in fact what it's talking about is the collecting of these sparks. And now moving to line 10, Alu Yisrael Mitzrayim, and when the Jewish people left Egypt, they took with them this money, this silver, as it says, Vayenatzlu et Mitzrayim, that they cleared out Egypt. And it doesn't just mean the money, it means the sacred sparks. And that's also what is hinted at in another verse, which says, "Vegam Erev Rav ala itam," a mixed multitude went with them, left Egypt with them, and that mixed multitude, the word Rav, is the 202 sparks from the total of 288 sparks that were sifted out in the exile of Egypt. So that means there are only 86 sparks left, and that's what you and I are dealing with now in daily life, those 86 sparks. But the 288, that is how many were there originally, according to Rabbi Isaac Luria in the Kabbalah, and through the process of being in Egypt, there we sifted out 202 sparks, and it's Joseph who started that whole process, so that in the reality of being in Egypt and then coming out, we were able to fulfill that. Now, Egypt, haya galut hachi kasha, it was the most difficult exile. And that's why in that most difficult exile, rov hanitzotzot, most of the sparks were sifted there. So in other words, the more difficult the situation, the more the sparks are sifted out. But odzot, and a further point, since the exile in Egypt is the root of all exiles, so we can understand that the effect of Joseph in sifting the sparks, which was giving, which was empowering us, the Jewish people, to be redeemed from Egypt, was also an empowerment for us to get through all the other exiles as well, till we come to the ultimate redemption. Through, and how do we do that? Through sifting the final 86 sparks, which hadn't yet been sifted. But the power was given to us through the sifting of the sparks in Egypt. And what we're hearing is that this is also that Joseph is the one who is helping empower us in that direction. And then it adds another very beautiful point. And all this is in addition to the idea, Shehainyan devialaked Yosef et kol hakesef, that when it says later on in the Sedra that Joseph, it's actually next week's Sedra, that Joseph gathered all the silver. Now the word kesef in Hebrew, which means silver, and therefore money or silver, it also means love, longing. Hu netinat koach le'inyan ha'ahava. This is empowering us that we should have the power of love. Etzel kol echad ve'echad mi'Yisrael, for every single Jew during Bizman HaGalut, during the time of exile, that we should have the power of love for God. As was heard, there are many deeply moving, deeply tragic, deeply stirring things that we hear from Israel. But one of the things was that there was a mother of a girl who was captive in Gaza. And she was doing something which many people have been doing, as it's a woman's mitzvah. One of the mitzvot of womanhood is to take challah, that when baking bread over a certain weight, a couple of pounds, 2.5 pounds, something like that, when one bakes that amount of dough, one takes off an amount of dough, which is called challah, and there's a blessing to be made, and then one burns that. And she was doing that, and she was talking to God and saying to God, please, God, save my daughter. And then suddenly she exclaims, God, I love you so much. God, I love you. And that, in the middle of all this tremendous pain, her daughter is a captive, but in the middle of this pain, she expresses her love for God. Now that's really this power of love, which is there inside the Jew, that even in the most terrible situation, there is this hidden love. Thank God, in her case, sometime later, her daughter was released. And that is one of the positive stories which have come out. But that idea of that love, that is something very, very special on a broader front, in a sense. I was writing about today the Holocaust memoirs. After the Holocaust, there are many memoirs were written, but then some began to be written by people who were very spiritual people, who were learned and Orthodox Jews who kept Jewish tradition and had a sense of the divine. For some people, the Holocaust meant cessation of any kind of religious belief. How can I believe in God after the terrible things that happened, as Elie Wiesel wrote about in very powerful terms? But others went through the Holocaust and their faith was strengthened, even if immeasurably challenged. But nonetheless coming through with it. And there's a whole range of Holocaust literature which expresses this in very, very meaningful ways. And so here we have also the idea that this spark of love should be in the heart of every Jew, even when we are in the darkness of exile. Okay, so let me stop now, because now we have actually, you know, we've bitten off a chunk, as it were, if the discourse ended here. Chabad Hasidic discourses are lengthy and have, you know, several different steps. The Rabbi Shneur Zalman's discourses, as at an earlier stage in his life, were very brief, like half a page long. And what we've learned now is a very powerful statement. So even if we didn't go a step further, it would still be very meaningful. So before we go further, let's just see if we have any further comment to say about it. Any question, any comment?
Dr. Talley, Jeffrey, yes. I was wondering, was Joseph aware of the amount of time he would need to spend in jail?
I don't know, Jeffrey.
You didn't know? Okay. Thank you.
I don't.
Yes. I have a question about the shards, the light. The you said there were 80. Stopped. Yeah.
86.
Is it wrong of me? But I was a bit disappointed that there was not that many. 86 is not many for the whole world. Huh?
You would think we should have got it done very quickly.
Yes.
You're quite right. We want Mashiach now. Surely we finish with these mere 86 spots.
But that's not talking about the idea of finding light in the darkness within the world. It's not saying there are only 86 places of that or ways of that.
No, I think you're right. It's two different things. There's the matter of finding godliness. You know, that God is everywhere, but God can sometimes be hidden.
Uh-huh.
And so even where God is hidden, it is possible to find God. That's something which is wherever unlimited. We are and in everywhere. So that doesn't have any limit to it.
Okay, got
the
it.
The sparks are specific elements of holiness which are in exile and which are redeemed by us being in a particular kind of challenge. Now, Rabbi Lou, did you want to comment on that?
Yeah, well, the immediate thing is that those 86 have been smashed to billions of particles.
That's good to know.
and that because the soul, each spark, and it's written in the Tanya. That's the book by Rabbi Shneur Zalman, that every person has certain refinements and certain elevations which are parallel to the situation that we're in the world. Those are the challenges, and there are the sparks that are hidden, and we have to redeem them and reveal them. So the souls nowadays, as the generations go by, don't have the same ability that those giant souls had in the early years. And therefore, where each one has a much smaller part, but it's like little needles in the haystack that we're all trying to get a hold of in terms of the numbers of sparks. As the world goes into a state of future shock on so many different levels, and the good thing is, this is like showing that the work, the pieces are falling into place. It's happening. It's a small amount that's necessary. And if I can just say something else about something which Rabbi Tali mentioned before, about Yosef was in Egypt. There were three patriarchs, and every Jew has within them an aspect of all those three people, the three patriarchs and the four matriarchs. But Yosef is also, on one level, he's the fourth, and in another level, he is even higher than they are, because he was the one that was able not only to represent the spirituality, but to retain and to be within the world where the challenges are, to prepare the world for that by redeeming, by elevating all the money and all the possessions of Egypt. What it means really is that he was setting the stage for the next 3,500 years until Moshiach, just as Yaakov, when he was wrestling with the angel. It's written in certain words. What were they wrestling about? What was the argument that it's written that Yaakov was left lonely on that side of the river because he returned in order to pick up some clay jugs. And it's written that that whole wrestling match was about the jugs, and that similar concept that the difference between holiness
and Yaakov represents, and the opposite, which the angel of Esav represents, is that the presence of God is in every single situation and in every single object and in every single day and in every single person and in every single event that happens in the world. And yeah, and Esav, the angel, said, "What did you come back for? You already over with your plastic." He said, "I came to pick up those drugs." He said, "What, you come for a plastic cup?"
Could you just elucidate that, Rabbi Liu? You're saying it very quickly, the idea of the jug.
Esav said, "What did you come back for?" Yaakov said, "Was I left a jug or two over here on this side." Now, the jugs were very... Here is a man with massive flocks, with massive wealth, coming back after 20 years at the in Haran, and he's coming back like for a disposable cup or something. He came back for a little clay jug or something. So the angel said, "I could see something big is significant, but something small." So Yaakov is saying that since God is continuously creating every person and every object and every situation, there's nothing insignificant. The small thing that you do and the small possession that you have is an opportunity to reveal a spark of those sparks. And in those days, it was the massive master spark, whatever the language is. And that was what the struggle was. Yaakov was saying there's nothing insignificant. Now, the rabbis tell us that the life stories of the patriarchs, and by extension, Yosef, who's also called a shepherd of all of Israel, for those four people, all of the events in their lives were, in a sense, coming attractions of what's going to happen over the next in history, A, and B, it was they giving us guidance and empowering us to be able to contend with that type of situation. Avram went to Egypt, and the Egyptians wanted, Pharaoh wanted to dominate over Sarah, but God didn't allow that to happen. Therefore, when the Jews went to Egypt, they were able to remain pure and loyal. And every single thing that happened to the patriarch was a message and also an empowerment for us to be able to do it. So when Yaakov was wrestling with the angel, he was showing us about the small things. When Yosef was collecting all the things together, he was also saying that the godly power that's there is that's what our whole task. God created the world so that the lowest world, the angels, don't have any credit. They're not good or bad. They're just angels. Just like an animal is innocent, no matter what it does, because it just is a product of instinct. A person has freedom of choice, and therefore the person can reveal the godliness in the physical world. And that's what we're all doing all the time. Every time one does a mitzvah, every time one says a bracha, every time one resists a temptation, all of these things are revealing sparks of godliness. And so therefore, Yosef was really in a very big fix, in a really difficult situation, the most difficult situation possible. He's a teenager, kidnapped, down in the tunnels, nobody protesting for him, nobody putting up posters for him, nobody getting in touch with him. And he was given temptations and tests. This was like the lowest world it can be. And then even when it was out of in power and privilege, but he was in a place like Egypt that was the opposite of everything that he stood for. It was a very sophisticated and advanced civilization and culture. But Yosef represented something different. And Yosef saw his job to be able to bring out the godliness within that. That's what it says in the last week's Sedra, that his master, he was a slave, the master saw gods with him. How do you see? Because he also was always looking for the godliness. He was in the prison and the dungeon within the slavery. And it says there that he is the one that lifted the spirits of other people who were of a completely different rank than he was. He was a slave and they were cabinet ministers. And Yosef was there helping them, encouraging them in every situation. So what the Maimer is saying is that our superficial reading is that Yosef went to Egypt, and that was a major part of exile. But if you look at it deeper, it was actually the roadmap and the key to redemption, because it's showing us that in a situation which is challenging and difficult and impossible, and who knows what can I do, in that situation, to be able to elevate it, and that's what you call redeeming the spark. And that's what it means, that he took all the godliness and he showed the people that that's what we are supposed to be doing in our situation.
Thank you very much.
Coyle.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Okay, so let's go on a little bit. Now, this refers to something which Rabbi Lou mentioned, which is the difference between Joseph and the other tribes, and even the patriarchs, perhaps. The reason, why was it specifically Joseph? Why wasn't it Isaac? Why wasn't it Reuven? Joseph was on a much higher level than his brothers. And in which way? It says in Hasidic teachings, here we have, it's known, the difference between Joseph and his brothers, and even the patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. These great patriarchs and the great brothers, Reuven, Yehuda, all these people, in order for them to be spiritual, they had to be sort of solitary figures in very spiritual occupations. You know, like Abraham, you don't see Abraham among crowds of people most of the time. You know, he's living a kind of very solitary, contemplative life. Yes, he's hospitable to people, but you see him basically one free of most kinds of organizational activity. And they were sheep farmers. And sheep farming, although it has its pressured times occasionally, you know, the sheep washing and stuff like that, but much of the time, you are standing with your flock of sheep on the hillside, and you can contemplate godliness. You know, that's why there are shepherds, minstrels who play a shepherd's flute, right? They've got time to think about that kind of thing. So the point is that in order for these great figures to be so close to God, they had to be somewhat abstracted from the world. That's why they chose to be sheep farmers. Mashen ken Yosef, where is Joseph? He was utterly bonded with God. And that's why he was able to be the ruler of the whole land. He was able to be in charge of the food distribution of the whole of Egypt. And he had a lot of work. Line 14. And even though he is involved with the running of this big food distribution organization, this did not confuse him at all from his involvement with the divine, because the aspects of this world were not separate from godliness. And so therefore they weren't something which preoccupied him rather than godliness. He saw godliness in everything. As the Rebbe Rashab, the fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe, explains in his discourse for this week's Sedra, which he said in 1918, and he speaks about the remarkable way that Joseph was able to be close with God, whatever he did. Now that is a distinguishing feature, distinguishing him from the other brothers, the children of Jacob, the sons of Jacob, and even from the patriarchs themselves. And so what this means is, avodato shel Yosef hayta ba'ofen shel menucha. Now that's an interesting idea. Joseph's service was in a way of peacefulness. That's why he was able to achieve this empowerment, of the redemption from Egypt, and even the future redemption. Even the future redemption. In the redemption, there'll be true peace. And even more so, than the time of King Solomon, when there was also peace, it says. And in Hasidic teachings, it discusses these different levels of peace, the peace as it will be in the time of the Messiah, the peace as it was in the time of King Solomon. And so what he's saying here is that Joseph has this quality of peace, and it's that quality of peace that he's somehow able to share with us. Now, that's an intriguing concept. So let's see how this is used now to explain the subject that we were talking about before, about the end of days, whether it's the end of days in the negative way, the end of days in the positive way. So now we can discuss these two midrashic explanations. The first one is Kate Samla Choshech, that the end is the end of darkness, that God gave a limit to the world, how long it's going to be dark, right? And we are in a period of terrific darkness, but God has put an end to how long this darkness is going to be. And the second explanation, that God gave a time how long Joseph is going to be in the prison, in the darkness of prison. So in that place, in prison, Joseph was able to achieve a sifting, that through that he achieved the end of darkness for all time. In other words, Joseph in prison, fighting his own battle, as was just described by Rabbi Lou, you know, a young man there in the darkness of an Egyptian prison, and with no one caring about him anywhere, being able to preserve this connection with God. And through this, he is achieving something for us now. For us now, that we are in a situation where there's darkness, but God has made an end to this darkness. And this is an empowerment for every individual Jew, man and woman, because all the entire Jewish people are called by the name of Joseph. We're called, as Rabbi Lou mentioned before, the flock of Joseph. And through our service together, through the time of exile, which begins also in a personal way with the descent of the soul into the body, which is a personal exile of our soul coming into this world. And that's like the prison. The soul in our body is like Joseph in prison. Through this, we achieve the idea of Kate Samla Choshech, putting an end to darkness for the whole world, for the whole universe. And that's also the connection between these two ways of understanding Vayihi Miketz, that it was the end, and the kates with the mem or the kates with the nun, whether it's the left or the right end, the negative end or the positive end, that in order that there should be the kates hayamin, the right end, the end which is right in a positive way, we have to be able to sift out the darkness of the negative end. And through that, we do that the way we do with the lights of Hanukkah, right? So when the lights of Hanukkah, which shine into the marketplace, and the Talmud discusses how long do you keep the lights of Hanukkah burning until the people have stopped walking away in the market, walking around in the marketplace. So that is the walking around in the marketplace is understood as something negative, and that the Hanukkah lights dissipate that negativity. La'alot b'chinat regel smoli, that we should elevate the left leg, that it should be enclosed in the left kate, the left end. In other words, we should have this negative end, but we should elevate it and it becomes the positive end, the kates hayamin with the nun. And that's also what it means in the Zohar, that this vayhi mikates, it was the end, it's the end of the left. That means the end of the left, literally, that it's the end of the darkness, that there won't be any more darkness, but light. And that's the ravining of the right, the yamin, which is rooted in a very exalted aspect of the Sfirot, in Atik, in the inwardness of Keter, in a very exalted level, the late Smala Bahai Atika, a level which is so high that in terms of the right-left configuration of the divine attributes, this is beyond the attribute left. Everything is right. And So let's just see. Let's just recap over here and see if we've got this point. So Joseph, he is working. He is facing these challenges on behalf of us, so that by him transforming darkness into light in his private realm in this prison, what he's doing is ensuring that the Jewish people close to his time, when they're in Egypt, will be able to come out and will be able to transform the darkness, and also distant from his time, because Egypt is the basis, the root of all future exiles. So that means us too, we too, in our exile, and including the terrible things that have happened in Israel, that is all an expression of exile, an expression of darkness. And that people should be able to find the sparks, the light in that darkness, and transform that darkness to light. So that's all part of what Joseph is achieving. And he empowers each one of us with this quality of love, because it's through the love that we turn the darkness to light. By the fact that we're in a place of darkness, and then we feel and we express love to God, and we express love to God in by doing mitzvot, by prayer and carrying out mitzvot and giving charity, putting on tefillin as a man, lighting Shabbat candles as a woman. These are ways in which we are connecting with the divine and expressing this love for the divine. That is the way we are turning our personal darkness into light. And it's a personal darkness for each individual as well, because when our soul came into the world, it's as if that soul descended into the prison pit, like Joseph was there. But in that prison pit, the soul here, in facing the challenges of daily life in a physical body, is seeking to find holiness and transform the profane into the holy. So are there any questions or points? Yeah, I was just trying to recap. Okay, so let's see if we can. Thank you, Eleanor. Now, let's just go back, the Rebbe says, let's add, considering what it says in this Hasidic discourse that we mentioned earlier, that the end of the 2 years is talking about the end of Torah, which is the Torah is like the 2,000 years, so it relates to Torah. And it means, now remember, we looked at this kind of a negative explanation, you know, God forbid, forgetting Torah when one is in the darkness of exile. But the Rebbe turns this around. The meaning is, shahakavana b'zeh, the meaning of this is, he sheyichle in yana hagbala shebetorah. The limitation of Torah should be dissolved away. The limits. Kafi shehi bevchinat yom yom, the way the Torah is day by day. And those are the two aspects of wisdom and understanding. Your wisdom, your understanding. The Torah is called our Jewish wisdom and understanding. And when you have just those two dimensions, you don't have the full delight of Torah. Because Torah is an essential delight, the delight of the essence of the divine and our essence. Now, if we are simply analyzing the Torah, you know, there are people who are very, very wise, very clever. They remember an enormous amount of Torah. They've studied through most of the Talmud and they've analyzed it and they can tell you what's on this page, what's on that page. However, so long that a person is limited by their own wisdom and understanding, we're limited. And it means even the pleasure, the delight that they have in Torah is itself limited, according to the measure of their wisdom and understanding. So that is something limiting. And what we're talking about here is that there should be an end to this limitation. We should be able to come to such an intimate relationship with the Torah that we break through the barriers of our own understanding, that we appreciate Torah beyond our understanding completely. And then we have the true delight of the essence expressed to us through the Torah. And that's what it means at the end of these 2 years. And it says in Kabbalah, in the book called Pardes by Rav Moshe Cordovero, that there is a year. One aspect of in the Sfirot, you can speak about years. There's the year of the 10th Sfirot, kingship. There's the year of the middle Sfirot, Tiferet, splendor. And these are the two aspects of the lower days and the higher days. The lower days are in Malchut, in kingship, which relates to time. And the upper days are higher up, higher than time. And so that's what it means when it says for 2 years of days, and the 2 years in one word. So this is to tell us about the way these are joined together, the unity of the upper sphera with kingship, the feminine sphera. The upper sphera are like the male, and the feminine sphera, kingship, is like the female. And they are unified, they become one level. And that's what it means, the week. That means the end of these 2 years of days, that through the service of Joseph in this sifting, in order to achieve the end of darkness, the divine putting an end to darkness, there comes the unity of the male and the female in these spherotic dimensions, which means there's a revelation of the radiance of the infinite flowing into kingship like the feminine, that there should be this unity in a continual way, with midut, that the unity is permanent. And that permanent unity, that is the real quality of redemption. Because then that's why we have Pharaoh dreaming. Now this Pharaoh dreaming, forget about the discourse says first. Don't worry about the evil Pharaoh of the story. Let's just think about the quality of Pharaoh as Pharaoh is in a realm of holiness. In holiness, Pharaoh means kingship. And the reason why it's called Pharaoh is, para means disclosing, and it's disclosing all radiance, like kingship is like the feminine. It's as if a radiance which is there to be revealed. And that means that through this sifting, the radiance of the infinite is drawn into kingship until it comes, it becomes like the quality of the upper level, and that is standing on the river. The river is the flow, the quality which flows down. The river flows, and it's the flow which flows from the male into the female. And standing on the river means higher than the river, and that is what is achieved by Pharaoh. Now, Pharaoh represents, in this imagery, Pharaoh represents the feminine. Pharaoh represents kingship. And instead of being under the flow, receiving the flow, he or she, let's say, is over the flow, which is like the messianic concept of Nekeva Tesovev Geva, that the woman of valor is the crown to her husband, is higher than her husband, as it will be in the future with the coming of Mashiach very swiftly. So the story that we are reading in the Torah has transformed itself into a story of redemption, and all the different details, they are being expressed as steps in our personal redemption and the redemption of the Jewish people as a whole, and the redemption of the divine presence, which will lead to the building of the temple in Jerusalem and the unity of the entire world.
Amen.
Thank you.
Goya, very good. Wonderful.